April 25th. I figured out a new way to line up the machines in the factory, and Mr. Donegan says it will save him $10,000 a year in labor and increased production. He gave me a $25 bonus. I wanted to take Joe Karp and Frank Riley out to lunch to celebrate, but Joe said he had to buy some things for his wife, and Frank said he was meeting his cousin for lunch. I guess it'll take a little time for them to get used to the changes in me. Everybody seems to be frightened of me. When I went over to Amos Borg and tapped him on the shoulder, he jumped up in the air. People don't talk to me much anymore or kid around the way they used to. It makes the job kind of lonely. April 27th. I got up the nerve today to ask Miss Kinnean to have dinner with me tomorrow night to celebrate my bonus. At first, she wasn't sure it was right, but I asked Dr. Strauss, and he said it was okay. Dr. Strauss and Dr. Niemer don't seem to be getting along so well. They're arguing all the time. This evening, when I came in to ask Dr. Strauss about having dinner with Miss Kinnean, I heard them shouting. Dr. Niemer was saying that it was his experiment and his research, and Dr. Strauss was shouting back that he contributed just as much because he found me through Miss Kinnean and he performed the operation. Dr. Strauss said that someday thousands of neurosurgeons might be using his technique all over the world. Dr. Niemer wanted to publish the results of the experiment at the end of this month. Dr. Strauss wanted to wait a while longer to be sure. Dr. Strauss said that Dr. Niemer was more interested in the chair of psychology at Princeton than he was in the experiment. Dr. Niemer said that Dr. Strauss was nothing but an opportunist who was trying to ride to glory on his coattails. When I left afterwards, I found myself trembling. I don't know why for sure, but it was as if I'd seen both men clearly for the first time. I remember hearing Bert say that Dr. Niemer had a shrew of a wife who was pushing him all the time to get things published so that he could become famous. Bert said that the dream of her life was to have a big-shot husband. Was Dr. Strauss really trying to ride on his coattails? April 28th. I don't understand why I never noticed how beautiful Miss Kinnean really is. She has brown eyes and feathery brown hair that comes to the top of her neck. She's only 34. I think from the beginning I had the feeling that she was an unreachable genius and very, very old. Now, every time I see her, she grows younger and more lovely. We had dinner and a long talk. When she said that I was coming along so fast that soon I'd be leaving her behind, I laughed. "It's true, Charlie. You're already a better reader than I am. You can read a whole page at a glance, while I can take in only a few lines at a time. And you remember every single thing you read. I'm lucky if I can recall the main thoughts and the general meaning." "I don't feel intelligent. There are so many things I don't understand." She took out a cigarette and I lit it for her. "You've got to be a little patient. You're accomplishing in days and weeks what it takes normal people to do in half a lifetime. That's what makes it so amazing. You're like a giant sponge now, soaking things in, facts, figures, general knowledge, and soon you'll begin to connect them, too. You'll see how the different branches of learning are related. There are many levels, Charlie, like steps on a giant ladder that take you up higher and higher to see more and more of the world around you. I can see only a little bit of that, Charlie, and I won't go much higher than I am now. But you'll keep climbing up and up and see more and more, and each step will open new worlds that you never even knew existed." She frowned. I just hope to God.
What?
"Never mind, Charles. I just hope I wasn't wrong to advise you to go into this in the first place." I laughed.
"How could that be? It worked, didn't it? Even Algernon is still smart."
We sat there silently for a while, and I knew what she was thinking about as she watched me toying with the chain of my rabbit's foot and my keys. I didn't want to think of that possibility any more than elderly people want to think of death. I knew that this was only the beginning. I knew what she meant about levels because I'd seen some of them already. The thought of leaving her behind made me sad. I'm in love with Miss Kinnean. Progress Report 12. April 30th. I've quit my job with Dunnigan's Plastic Box Company. Mr. Dunnigan insisted that it would be better for all concerned if I left. What did I do to make them hate me so? The first I knew of it was when Mr. Dunnigan showed me the petition. 840 names, everyone connected with the factory except Fanny Gurdon. Scanning the list quickly, I saw at once that hers was the only missing name. All the rest demanded that I be fired. Joe Karp and Frank Riley wouldn't talk to me about it. No one else would either, except Fanny. She was one of the few people I'd known who set her mind to something and believed it no matter what the rest of the world proved, said, or did, and Fanny did not believe that I should have been fired. She had been against the petition on principle, and despite the pressure and threats, she'd held out. "Which don't mean to say," she remarked, "that I don't think there's something mighty strange about you, Charlie. Them changes? I don't know. You used to be a good, dependable, ordinary man. Not too bright, maybe, but honest. Who knows what you've done to yourself to get so smart all of a sudden? Like everybody around here's been saying, Charlie, it's not right." "But how can you say that, Fanny? What's wrong with a man becoming intelligent and wanting to acquire knowledge and understanding of the world around him?" She stared down at her work, and I turned to leave. Without looking at me, she said, "It was evil when Eve listened to the snake and ate from the tree of knowledge. It was evil when she saw that she was naked. If not for that, none of us would ever have to grow old and sick and die." Once again now, I have the feeling of shame burning inside me. This intelligence has driven a wedge between me and all the people I once knew and loved. Before, they laughed at me and despised me for my ignorance and dullness. Now, they hate me for my knowledge and understanding. What in God's name do they want of me? They've driven me out of the factory. Now, I'm more alone than ever before. May 15th. Dr. Strauss is very angry at me for not having written any progress reports in 2 weeks. He's justified, because the lab is now paying me a regular salary. I told him I was too busy thinking and reading. When I pointed out that writing was such a slow process that it made me impatient with my poor handwriting, he suggested that I learn to type. It's much easier to write now because I can type nearly 75 words a minute. Dr. Strauss continually reminds me of the need to speak and write simply so that people will be able to understand me. I'll try to review all the things that happened to me during the last 2 weeks. Algernon and I were presented to the American Psychological Association, sitting in convention with the World Psychological Association last Tuesday. We created quite a sensation. Dr. Niemer and Dr. Strauss were proud of us. I suspect that Dr. Niemer, who is 60, 10 years older than Dr. Strauss, finds it necessary to see tangible results of his work, undoubtedly the result of pressure by Mrs. Niemer. Contrary to my earlier impressions of him, I realize that Dr. Niemer is not at all a genius. He has a very good mind, but it struggles under the specter of self-doubt. He wants people to take him for a genius. Therefore, it is important for him to feel that his work is accepted by the world. I believe that Dr. Niemer was afraid of further delay because he worried that someone else might make a discovery along these lines and take the credit from him. Dr. Strauss, on the other hand, might be called a genius, although I feel that his areas of knowledge are too limited. He was educated in the tradition of narrow specialization. The broader aspects of background were neglected far more than necessary,
even for a neurosurgeon.
I was shocked to learn that the only ancient languages he could read were Latin, Greek, and Hebrew, and that he knows almost nothing of mathematics beyond the elementary levels of the calculus of variations. When he admitted this to me, I found myself almost annoyed. It was as if he'd hidden this part of himself in order to deceive me, pretending, as do many people I've discovered, to be what he is not. No one I've ever known is what he appears to be on the surface. Dr. Niemer appears to be uncomfortable around me. Sometimes when I try to talk to him, he just looks at me strangely and turns away. I was angry at first when Dr. Strauss told me I was giving Dr. Niemer an inferiority complex. I thought he was mocking me, and I'm oversensitive at being made fun of. How was I to know that a highly respected psychoexperimentalist like Niemer was unacquainted with Hindustani and Chinese? It's absurd when you consider the work that is being done in India and China today in the very field of his study. I asked Dr. Strauss how Niemer could refute Rahajamadi's attack on his method and results if Niemer couldn't even read them in the first place. That strange look on Dr. Strauss's face can mean only one of two things. Either he doesn't want to tell Niemer what they're saying in India, or else, and this worries me, Dr. Strauss doesn't know either. I must be careful to speak and write clearly and simply so that people won't laugh. May 18th, I am very disturbed. I saw Miss Kenyon last night for the first time in over a week. I tried to avoid all discussions of intellectual concepts and to keep the conversation on a simple, everyday level. But she just stared at me blankly and asked me what I meant about the mathematical variance equivalent in Dorberman's Fifth Concerto. When I tried to explain, she stopped me and laughed. I guess I got angry, but I suspect I'm approaching her on the wrong level. No matter what I try to discuss with her, I am unable to communicate. I must review Vrostadt's equations on levels of semantic progression. I find that I don't communicate with people much anymore. Thank God for books and music and things I can think about. I am alone in my apartment at Mrs. Flynn's boarding house most of the time and seldom speak to anyone. May 20th. I would not have noticed the new dishwasher, a boy of about 16, at the corner diner where I take my evening meals, if not for the incident of the broken dishes. They crash to the floor, shattering and sending bits of white china under the tables. The boy stood there, dazed and frightened, holding the empty tray in his hand. The whistles and catcalls from the customers, the cries of, "Hey, there go the profits! Mazel tov!" and, "Well, he didn't work here very long," which invariably seemed to follow the breaking of glass or dishware in a public restaurant, all seemed to confuse him. When the owner came to see what the excitement was about, the boy cowered, as if he expected to be struck, and threw up his arms as if to ward off the blow. All right, you dope," shouted the owner. "Don't just stand there. Get the broom and sweep that mess up. A broom, you idiot. It's in the kitchen. Sweep up all the pieces." The boy saw that he was not going to be punished. His frightened expression disappeared, and he smiled and hummed as he came back with the broom to sweep the floor. A few of the rowdier customers kept up the remarks, amusing themselves at his expense. "Here, sonny, over here. There's a nice piece behind you." "Come on, do it again." "He's not so dumb. It's easier to break 'em than to wash 'em." As his vacant eyes moved across the crowd of amused onlookers, he slowly mirrored their smiles and finally broke into an uncertain grin at the joke, which he obviously did not understand. I felt sick inside as I looked at his dull, vacuous smile, the wide, bright eyes of a child, uncertain
but eager to please. They were laughing at him because he was mentally retarded. And I had been laughing at him too. Suddenly, I was furious at myself and all those who were smirking at him. I jumped up and shouted, "Shut up! Leave him alone! It's not his fault. He can't understand. He can't help what he is. But for God's sake, he's still a human being." The room grew silent. I cursed myself for losing control and creating a scene. I tried not to look at the boy as I paid my check and walked out without touching my food. I felt ashamed for both of us. How strange it is that people of honest feelings and sensibility, who would not take advantage of a man born without arms or legs or eyes, how such people think nothing of abusing a man born with low intelligence. It infuriated me to think that not too long ago, I, like this boy, had foolishly played the clown. And I had almost forgotten. I'd hidden the picture of the old Charlie Gordon from myself because now that I was intelligent, it was something that had to be pushed out of my mind. But today, in looking at that boy, for the first time, I saw what I had been. I was just like him. Only a short time ago, I learned that people laughed at me. Now I can see that unknowingly, I joined with them in laughing at myself. That hurts most of all. I have often reread my progress reports and seen the illiteracy, the childish naivete, the mind of low intelligence peering from a dark room through the keyhole at the dazzling light outside. I see that even in my dullness, I knew that I was inferior and that other people had something I lacked, something denied me. In my mental blindness, I thought that it was somehow connected with the ability to read and write, and I was sure that if I could get those skills, I would automatically have intelligence too. Even a feeble-minded man wants to be like other men. A child may not know how to feed itself or what to eat, yet it knows of hunger. This, then, is what I was like. I never knew. Even with my gift of intellectual awareness, I never really knew. This day was good for me. Seeing the past more clearly, I have decided to use my knowledge and skills to work in the field of increasing human intelligence levels. Who is better equipped for this work? Who else has lived in both worlds? These are my people. Let me use my gift to do something for them. Tomorrow, I will discuss with Dr. Strauss the manner in which I can work in this area. I may be able to help him work out the problems of widespread use of the technique which was used on me. I have several good ideas of my own. There is so much that might be done with this technique. If I could be made into a genius, what about thousands of others like myself? What fantastic levels might be achieved by using this technique on normal people, on geniuses? There are so many doors to open. I am impatient to begin. Progress Report 13. May 23rd. It happened today. Algernon bit me. I visited the lab to see him, as I do occasionally, and when I took him out of his cage, he snapped at my hand. I put him back and watched him for a while. He was unusually disturbed and vicious. May 24th. Bert, who is in charge of the experimental animals, tells me that Algernon is changing. He is less cooperative. He refuses to run the maze anymore. General motivation has decreased, and he hasn't been eating. Everyone is upset about what this may mean. May 25th. They've been feeding Algernon, who now refuses to work the shifting lock problem. Everyone identifies me with Algernon.
In a way, we're both the first of our kind. They're all pretending that Algernon's behavior is not necessarily significant for me. But it's hard to hide the fact that some of the other animals who were used in this experiment are showing strange behavior. Dr. Strauss and Dr. Niemer have asked me not to come to the lab anymore. I know what they're thinking, but I can't accept it. I am going ahead with my plans to carry their research forward. With all due respect to both of these fine scientists, I am well aware of their limitations. If there is an answer, I'll have to find it out for myself. Suddenly, time has become very important to me. May 29th. I have been given a lab of my own and permission to go ahead with the research. I'm on to something, working day and night. I've had a cot moved into the lab. Most of my writing time is spent on the notes, which I keep in a separate folder. But from time to time, I feel it necessary to put down my moods and my thoughts out of sheer habit. I find the calculus of intelligence to be a fascinating study. Here is the place for the application of all the knowledge I have acquired. In a sense, it's the problem I've been concerned with all my life. May 31st. Dr. Strauss thinks I'm working too hard. Dr. Niemer says I'm trying to cram a lifetime of research and thought into a few weeks. I know I should rest, but I'm driven on by something inside that won't let me stop. I've got to find the reason for the sharp regression in Algernon. I've got to know if and when it will happen to me. June 4th. Letter to Dr. Strauss. Copy. Dear Dr. Strauss, under separate cover, I am sending you a copy of my report entitled The Algernon-Gordon Effect, a study of structure and function of increased intelligence, which I would like to have you read and have published. As you see, my experiments are completed. I have included in my report all of my formulae, as well as mathematical analysis in the appendix. Of course, these should be verified. Because of its importance to both you and Dr. Niemer, and need I say to myself, too, I have checked and rechecked my results a dozen times in the hope of finding an error. I am sorry to say the results must stand. Yet for the sake of science, I am grateful for the little bit that I here add to the knowledge of the function of the human mind and of the laws governing the artificial increase of human intelligence. I recall your once saying to me that an experimental failure or the disproving of a theory was as important to the advancement of learning as a success would be. I know now that this is true. I am sorry, however, that my own contribution to the field must rest upon the ashes of the work of two men I regard so highly. Yours truly, Charles Gordon. Enclosed report. June 5th. I must not become emotional. The facts and the results of my experiments are clear, and the more sensational aspects of my own rapid climb cannot obscure the fact that the tripling of intelligence by the surgical technique developed by Drs. Strauss and Niemer must be viewed as having little or no practical applicability, at the present time, to the increase of human intelligence. As I review the records and data on Algernon, I see that although he is still in his physical infancy, he has regressed mentally. Motor activity is impaired. There is a general reduction of glandular activity. There is an accelerated loss of coordination. There are also strong indications of progressive amnesia. As will be seen by my report, these and other physical and mental deterioration syndromes can be predicted with statistically significant results by the application of my formula. The surgical stimulus to which we were both subjected has resulted in an intensification and acceleration of all mental processes. The unforeseen development, which I have taken the liberty of calling the Algernon-Gordon effect, is the logical extension of the entire intelligence speed-up. The hypothesis here proven may be described simply in the following terms. Artificially increased intelligence deteriorates at a rate of time directly proportional to the quantity of the increase. I feel that this, in itself, is an important discovery. As long as I am able to write, I will continue to record my thoughts in these progress reports. It is one of my few pleasures. However, by all indications, my own mental deterioration will be very rapid. I have already begun to notice signs of emotional instability and forgetfulness, the first symptoms of the burnout. June 10th. Deterioration progressing. I have become absent-minded. Algernon died 2 days ago. Dissection shows my predictions were right. His brain had decreased in weight, and there was a general smoothing out of cerebral convolutions, as well as a deepening and broadening of brain fissures. I guess the same thing is, or will soon be, happening to me. Now that it's definite, I don't want it to happen. I put Algernon's body in a cheese box and buried him in the backyard. I cried. June 15th. Dr. Strauss came to see me again. I wouldn't open the door, and I told him to go away. I want to be left to myself. I have become touchy and irritable. I feel the darkness closing in. It's hard to throw off thoughts of suicide. I keep telling myself how important this introspective journal will be. It's a strange sensation to pick up a book that you've read and enjoyed just a few months ago and discover that you don't remember it. I remembered how great I thought John Milton was, but when I picked up Paradise Lost, I couldn't understand it at all. I got so angry I threw the book across the room. I've got to try to hold on to some of it, some of the things I've learned. Oh, God, please don't take it all away. June 19th. Sometimes at night, I go out for a walk. Last night, I couldn't remember where I lived. A policeman took me home. I have the strange feeling that this has all happened to me before, a long time ago. I keep telling myself I'm the only person in the world who can describe what's happening to me. June 21st. Why can't I remember? I've got to fight. I lie in bed for days and I don't know who or where I am. Then it all comes back to me in a flash. Fugues of amnesia, symptoms of senility, second childhood. I can watch them coming on. It's so cruelly logical. I learn so much and so fast. Now my mind is deteriorating rapidly. I won't let it happen. I'll fight it. I can't help thinking of the boy in the restaurant, the blank expression, the silly smile, the people laughing at him. No! Please, not that again. June 22nd. I'm forgetting things that I learned recently. It seems to be following the classic pattern. The last things learned are the first things forgotten. Or is that the pattern? I'd better look it up again. I reread my paper on the Algernon-Gordon effect, and I get the strange feeling that it was written by someone else. There are parts I don't even understand. Motor activity impaired. I keep tripping over things, and it becomes increasingly difficult to type. June 23rd. I've given up using the typewriter completely. My coordination is bad. I feel that I'm moving slower and slower. Had a terrible shock today. I picked up a copy of an article I used in my research, Kruger's Überpsychische Ganzheit, to see if it would help me understand what I had done. First, I thought there was something wrong with my eyes. Then I realized I could no longer read German. I tested myself in other languages. All gone. June 30th. A week since I dared to write again. It's slipping away like sand through my fingers. Most of the books I have are too hard for me now. I get angry with them because I know that I read and understood them just a few weeks ago. I keep telling myself I must keep writing these reports so that somebody will know what is happening to me. But it gets harder to form the words and remember spellings. I have to look up even simple words in the dictionary now, and it makes me impatient with myself. Dr. Strauss comes around almost every day, but I told him I wouldn't see or speak to anybody. He feels guilty. They all do. But I don't blame anyone. I knew what might happen. But how it hurts. July 7th. I don't know where the week went. Today's Sunday, I know, because I can see through my window people going to church. I think I stayed in bed all week, but I remember Mrs. Flynn bringing food to me a few times. I keep saying over and over, I've got to do something, but then I forget, or maybe it's just easier not to do what I say I'm going to do. I think of my mother and father a lot these days. I found a picture of them with me taken at a beach. My father has a big ball under his arm, and my mother is holding me by the hand. I don't remember them the way they are in the picture. All I remember is my father drunk most of the time and arguing with Mom about money. He never shaved much, and he used to scratch my face when he hugged me. My mother said he died, but Cousin Milty said he heard his mom and dad say that my father ran away with another woman. When I asked my mother, she slapped my face and said my father was dead. I don't think I ever found out which was true, but I don't care much. He said he was going to take me to see cows on a farm once, but he never did. He never kept his promises. July 10th. My landlady, Mrs. Flynn, is very worried about me. She says the way I lay around all day and don't do anything, I remind her of her son before she threw him out of the house. She said she doesn't like loafers. If I'm sick, it's one thing, but if I'm a loafer, that's another thing, and she won't have it. I told her, I think I'm sick. I try to read a little bit every day, mostly stories, but sometimes I have to read the same thing over and over again because I don't know what it means. And it's hard to write. I know I should look up all the words in the dictionary, but it's so hard and I'm so tired all the time. Then I got the idea that I would only use the easy words instead of the long, hard ones. That saves time. I put flowers on Algernon's grave about once a week. Mrs. Flynn thinks I'm crazy to put flowers on a mouse's grave, but I told her that Algernon was special. July 14th. It's Sunday again. I don't have anything to do to keep me busy now because my television set is broke and I don't have any money to get it fixed. I think I lost this month's check from the lab. I don't remember. I get awful headaches and aspirin doesn't help me much. Mrs. Flynn knows I'm really sick and she feels very sorry for me. She's a wonderful woman whenever someone is sick. July 22nd. Mrs. Flynn called a strange doctor to see me. She was afraid I was going to die. I told the doctor I wasn't too sick and that I only forget sometimes. He asked me did I have any friends or relatives, and I said no, I don't have any. I told him I had a friend called Algernon once, but he was a mouse and we used to run races together. He looked at me kind of funny, like he thought I was crazy. He smiled when I told him I used to be a genius. He talked to me like I was a baby, and he winked at Mrs. Flynn. I got mad and chased him out because he was making fun of me the way they all used to. July 24th. I have no more money. And Mrs. Flynn says I got to go to work somewhere and pay the rent because I haven't paid for over 2 months. I don't know any work but the job I used to have at Donegan's Plastic Box Company. I don't want to go back there because they all knew me when I was smart and maybe they'll laugh at me. But I don't know what else to do to get money.
July 25th. I was looking at some of my old progress reports and it's very funny, but I can't read what I wrote. I can make out some of the words, but they don't make sense.
Miss Kinnean came to the door, but I said, "Go away, I don't want to see you." She cried, and I cried too, but I wouldn't let her in because I didn't want her to laugh at me. I told her I didn't like her anymore. I told her I didn't want to be smart anymore. That's not true. I still love her, and I still want to be smart, but I had to say that so she'd go away. She gave Mrs. Flynn money to pay the rent. I don't want that. I got to get a job. Please, please let me not forget how to read and write.
July 27th. Mr. Donegan was very nice when I came back and asked him for my old job of janitor. First, he was very suspicious, but I told him what happened to me. Then he looked very sad and put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Charlie Gordon, you got guts." Everybody looked at me when I came downstairs and started working in the toilet, sweeping it out like I used to. I told myself, "Charlie, if they make fun of you, don't get sore, because you remember they're not so smart as you once thought they were. And besides, they were once your friends. And if they laughed at you, that doesn't mean anything, because they liked you too." One of the new men who came to work there after I went away made a nasty crack. He said, "Hey, Charlie, I hear you're a very smart fella, a real quiz kid. Say something intelligent." I felt bad, but Joe Karp came over and grabbed him by the shirt and said, "Leave him alone, you lousy cracker, or I'll break your neck." I didn't expect Joe to take my part, so I guess he's really my friend. Later, Frank Riley came over and said, "Charlie, if anybody bothers you or tries to take advantage, you call me or Joe and we will set 'em straight." I said, "Thanks, Frank," and I got choked up, so I had to turn around and go into the supply room so he wouldn't see me cry. It's good to have friends. July 28th. I did a dumb thing today. I forgot I wasn't in Miss Kinnean's class at the Adult Center anymore like I used to be. I went in and sat down in my old seat in the back of the room, and she looked at me funny, and she said, "Charles?" I didn't remember she ever called me that before, only Charlie. So I said, "Hello, Miss Kinnean. I'm ready for my lesson today, only I lost my reader that we was using." She started to cry and run out of the room, and everybody looked at me. And I saw they wasn't the same people who used to be in my class. Then, all of a sudden, I remembered some things about the operation and me getting smart, and I said, "Holy smoke, I really pulled a Charlie Gordon that time." I went away before she come back to the room. That's why I'm going away from New York for good. I don't want to do nothing like that again. I don't want Miss Kinnean to feel sorry for me. Everybody feels sorry at the factory, and I don't want that either. So I'm going someplace where nobody knows that Charlie Gordon was once a genius, and now he can't even read a book or write good. I'm taking a couple of books along, and even if I can't read them, I'll practice hard, and maybe I won't forget everything I learned. If I try real hard, maybe I'll be a little bit smarter than I was before the operation. I got my rabbit's foot and my lucky penny, and maybe they will help me. If you ever read this, Miss Kinnean, don't be sorry for me. I'm glad I got a second chance to be smart because I learned a lot of things that I never even knew were in this world, and I'm grateful that I saw it all for a little bit. I don't know why I'm dumb again or what I did wrong. Maybe it's because I didn't try hard enough. But if I try and practice very hard, maybe I'll get a little smarter and know what all the words are. I remember a little bit how nice I had a feeling with the blue book that has the torn cover when I read it. That's why I'm gonna keep trying to get smart so I can have that feeling again. It's a good feeling to know things and be smart. I wish I had it right now. If I did, I would sit down and read all the time. Anyway, I bet I'm the first dumb person in the world who ever found out something important for science. I remember I did something, but I don't remember what. So I guess it's like I did it for all the dumb people like me. Goodbye, Miss Kinnean, and Dr. Strauss, and everybody. And P.S., please tell Dr. Niemer not to be such a grouch when people laugh at him, and he would have more friends. It's easy to make friends if you let people laugh at you. I'm going to have lots of friends where I go. P.P.S. Please, if you get a chance, put some flowers on Algernon's grave in the backyard.